Good morning. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. Yesterday was National Friendship Day. Studies show that high-quality friendships provide many positive health benefits, such as lower incidences of chronic illnesses, higher levels of happiness, and lower mortality rates. But friendships change over time. Friends we had as children may not be our friends in adulthood. This morning we're going to talk about friendships, and we'd like to hear about yours. Have you ever lost touch with a meaningful friendship, and how did that affect you? Have you been successful in reconnecting with a friend? How did you go about it? What recommendations do you have for others considering getting in touch? Get in touch with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is William Rollins, Stonker Professor of Interpersonal Communication in the School of Communication Studies at Ohio University. He specializes in communication between friends across the course of life. Bill Rollins, welcome to the morning show. Appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
So, strong friendships, why do we need them? How do we benefit from having deep connections to other people?
Well, there's a few reasons why friendships are so important, John. I mean, one thing is dating all the way back to Aristotle. We're talking about four centuries before the Common Era. Friendship was spoken of as part of the well-lived life. And Aristotle said things that when I've talked to people ages 14 through over 100 years old have said the same thing. They've said, my life would not have been worth living without my friends. When you talk about benefits, you know, you had mentioned at the beginning of the show that friendships change. They do change across the life course, and we'll talk about that. But people also say the same thing across life about three primary benefits of close friendship. The first one is somebody to talk to, you know, someone who takes our concerns seriously and listens to us. Somebody to depend on, people say, you know, my friends are going to be there for me. And finally, someone to have fun with. Across life, friends are a source of joy. So those benefits people talk about, I was struck by it. Across the life course, somebody to talk to, somebody to depend on, and somebody to enjoy.
Yeah, it seems to me that there are different levels of friendship. If it's a continuum, we have maybe acquaintances on one end, people you see on the street and you know, and you exchange greetings and, you know, you see at social functions and so forth. And then on the other end, you have those really deep personal friendships that last for years and people that you really do kind of depend on, and they're really an important part of your life. So how do we... how long does it take then to develop that kind of close relationship with someone? Can we quantify that?
You know, I'm reluctant to quantify a lot of things about friendship, because friendship is a very subjective thing, John. And I like your point, and I think it's an important one, that there's such an array of types of friendship. And it's interesting to me because, you know, we are very promiscuous with the use of the word friend. I mean, we'll say friend about someone that we've just been watching one quarter of a football game with. You walk up and I say, hey, let me introduce you to my friend, you know, Carly, something like that. Meanwhile, it can refer to someone that we've known, you know, since kindergarten. And, you know, we're three or four decades later. The thing about that is that it gives friendship a lot of flexibility. It's a very flexible relationship, but it's also a very vulnerable relationship. And we can talk about that more, but friendships are very susceptible to circumstances, and we can talk about why.
Well, let's talk about that. What are those circumstances?
See, the thing that's most distinctive about friendship, and it kind of captivated... my scholarly curiosity. In 1978, I've been studying friendships for 40 years, is that friendships are voluntary relationships, John. You can't make people be friends with each other. People choose each other to be friends, and they remain friends as long as they're fulfilling their expectations for the relationship. Now, what's interesting about that to me is contrast that with all the other types of relationships we're involved in. Family relationships are blood bonds. You're never not somebody's son, somebody's brother, somebody's father or sister. That's a relationship that exists forever. When you think about being married, that's a legal bond. It's also, for many people, religiously sanctioned. And you don't just drift into marriage and drift out of marriage. Once you're married, you're legally bound to someone. You have to be divorced to not be married any longer. You look at work relationships governed by contracts. But friendship is based on choice. Now, the other thing about it that's interesting is friendship can be a freestanding relationship. Like, we all have friends that we think of this person as our friend, and this is our friend. But friendship can also be a dimension of other relationships. People become friends with their spouses, with their partners. They become friends with their parents at a certain point in their life, okay? Because they choose each other as friends, not because they have to be friends. But that makes friendships very susceptible to circumstances. So when a lot of times when people start to encounter what's called the role crunch, say like in their 20s when they're making a lot of commitments to a career, perhaps to a lifelong partner, perhaps to political involvements, their friends take a back seat. There's not as much time for friends. And throughout life, there's situations where friendships are susceptible to circumstances.
Well, and I would assume that things can change. So, for example, let's say you had a childhood friend, you went to grade school, middle school, high school together, and then you went to different universities in different parts of the country. Distance can change that, even in the age of instant communication around the world. How does distance then affect? Is that one of the circumstances? If we're just physically separated, it's hard to maintain a friendship, or we meet new friends, and maybe we change as a person through that, to whatever that experience was that took us to a different part of the country. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it's a very fair statement, and there's a variety of, I think, important issues embedded in that statement. I mean, first of all, yes. I mean, across the life course, you know, a person I spoke with once said, time and distance take their measure. And yes, we get separated from friends. I think the biggest chasm between friends is time. And yes, distance is important. Now, you mentioned distance. I mean, I believe in the whole issue of social media and how in some ways that does allow people to remain in contact. In some ways, it also starts to water down friendships, because the close friendships that we started talking about at the beginning of this conversation really thrive on being in each other's presence, being able to hear each other's voice, being able to do what a philosopher I really enjoyed at a certain point called grow older together. When you're sharing a vivid presence, you're in each other's presence, those moments are shared in a way that aren't shared online. Now, the other thing I would say, John, and I think something that I think is so intriguing about friendship, and I've noticed this for decades, I call it a tension between the freedom to be independent and the freedom to be dependent. I believe that when people become close friends, they gift each other two freedoms. So, John, you and I become friends in college, okay? And you know, we're going to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And you get a job at the radio station in Madison. But it looks like I'm going to move to Des Moines, Iowa. And I say, man, I've got a job in Iowa. And you say, Bill, you got to take that job. That's best for you, okay? Because we've given each other the freedom to be independent. Meanwhile, you'll say, but if you need me, I'm here for you. So we're also free to depend on each other. Now, I think the genius of that is it gives friendship flexibility. One of the problems is that right when I might be wanting to exercise my greatest independence, it may be when you most need to depend on me. And friends need to work that out.
We'll pick up this conversation on the other side of the news. We're talking with Bill Rollins, an expert in interpersonal communication about friendship. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about friendship? Do you have friendships that maybe you've drifted apart from somebody and then gotten back together? How did that work? 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Kerry Kaufman. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Stay tuned. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kerry Kaufman. Kerry is back on Wednesday. Friendships are an important part of our lives, but they can change over time, and we can lose or gain friendships throughout the course of our lives. We're talking about that this morning on the Morning Show with Bill Rollins, Stocker Professor of Interpersonal Communication in the School of Communication Studies at Ohio University. And we're talking about it with you as well. Tell us about your friendship experiences. Have you had long-term friends that, well, you suddenly didn't have as much in common with as you used to? Maybe you just kind of drifted apart, whether it was space or time or whatever. But maybe later in life you got back together again somehow. And how did that work? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Bill Rollins, how do we recognize a good friendship when we're in one? What are the traits of a good friend?
Well, there's a few things that you need to keep in mind in terms of a good friend. I mean, I think one of the simpler ways to put it is a friend sees us in ways that we would like to be seen, responds to us in ways that confirms a strong sense of who we are, who we'd like to be. I mean, one of the really significant values of friendship is we want to live the good life together, and we want to improve each other. So, you know, one thing that can happen between friends is there's a tension between acceptance and judgment. Okay, we're trying to be the best we can with each other. We're trying to live a well lived life. We're trying to enjoy life, and what we do is we typically expect acceptance from friends. People, we feel like they accept us. They affirm who we are. However, sometimes we also need judgment from friends. And the thing that I think people sometimes don't remember is when you choose a friend, you're choosing someone who shares values with you, who shares interests, who shares what you think is important in life. And so at the same time that we accept each other for that reason, sometimes we need each other's judgment. And many times that's how friendships break up, is when someone starts getting interested in things, doing things that kind of go against what we thought was important to living well together. And at that point, you know, you have a friend that'll say to you, look, I care about you and what you're doing is wrong. And if you can't keep doing this, some people will continue to do it, and that will end the friendship.
So sometimes it might be necessary to, I don't know, for lack of a better term, break up with a friend. So how do you go about that?
You know, it's something. Because they're voluntary, and because we tend to be, as a culture, spread really thin with our time commitments and our activities, one of the ways that people tend to end friendships is they just contact each other less and less. until there's no contact expected. Kind of, and the thing about it, though, in terms of the two freedoms we gift each other, is many times we don't know for sure if our friendship has ended or if we've just kind of lost touch with each other. And the only way to find out is to contact the person. And another way that friendships end is, you know, I mean, one of the most poignant ways that friendships end is when someone betrays someone. And, you know, this can happen because friendships are part of other relationships. So, you know, we were great friends, and then we're working at the same place, and the politics of the workplace come between us, and someone might betray us, and then the friendship ends. Truth to tell, John, I'm not sure how often friends kind of break up in the way that romantic relationships break up, which is to say, someone says, "You're not my friend anymore." There's something tacit about the way most friends break up, unless it's the betrayal. And the betrayal is one of the classic examples of how a friendship can end. Someone betrays me, and you say, you know, "You're not my friend anymore."
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not like a friendship is a contractual relationship. I mean, it's not, there isn't anything formal where, well, I don't know, I suppose, depending on the culture or whatnot, you might swear a blood oath to a friend or something like that, but I'm being a little facetious there. But I mean, friendships are more of an informal relationship. They happen. It would be really unusual to go up to somebody and say, "Hey, by the way, we're not friends anymore."
Right.
You know, you just don't do that. And so there's kind of a drifting apart. You just don't talk to somebody. What happens, though, if let's say that you decide that that your friendship with somebody has become toxic for you. It's no longer a healthy relationship for you, and you want to just not really have anything to do with that person, but the other person doesn't agree that that's what's going on. How do you handle that?
That's an excellent question, and I think that's where there has to be a statement made. I mean, this is the whole issue of judgment and acceptance, and it can work in a positive way where you can say to someone, "Do you realize who you're becoming? Do you realize how much you're changing?" Okay. And you also have to know that I can't be friends with you if you continue to do this. Mm-hmm. I can't be friends with you. And, you know, it's a choice that you have to make. I mean, so if a friendship becomes toxic, I think that is one of the times where you say, "Do you realize, you know, how many times you've done this? Or do you realize how you know, ugly you're being to this person that we both care about? You know, you can't do that anymore. I can't be friends with you." I think that is an example where people probably should confront a friend, should be. Because then, you know, a lot of it has to do with how strong the friendship is in the first place. You're giving someone a choice to improve. You're giving someone a choice to behave in a way that is more in conformity with the values that you've shared up until now. You're giving them a choice. That honors them. It honors the friendship. And if they choose not to, you know, you've been true to the friendship, but the friendship can't continue.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Have you ever had to break up with a friend? Has someone broken up with you, your long-term friendship, and someone decides, you know what, this isn't working for me? How did you handle it? What did you feel like? How was that for you? And maybe later in life, did you somehow or other reconnect and rekindle that friendship? Tell us your friendship stories at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Bill Rollins, Stocker Professor of Interpersonal Communication at Ohio University, about friendships today. So, Bill, what are some signs of a toxic friendship? How do we know when a friendship has become toxic?
I guess there's a range of things. I mean, one is, you know, one of the things that we do with friends is we build up an assumption of benevolence. I mean, you know, you know, with our good friends, even when they say things to us that might be hurtful, if someone else said it, you know, like, you know, boy, that was a lousy thing to say, okay. We assume that they have our best interests in mind. You know, we assume that they mean well. When it starts to feel more and more like when the hurtful statements, okay, or, you know, not being invited, the lack of invitations, or, you know, maybe continuing to use us in certain ways without offering, you know, kind of assistance to us. When it starts to feel like, you know, maybe this person doesn't have my best interests in mind anymore. That's a pretty important sign right there.
800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Call us and tell us some of your friendship stories. So it's how do we come to terms with accepting that people change and they might not be the person that they were when we first knew them and became friends?
You're asking some good questions. You know, I mean, one of the things that happens across the life course is that, you know, we use the phrase people growing apart, you know, and people make choices that involve them in different ways of life than when they first got together. I mean, I think one of the really kind of poignant aspects of young adulthood maybe is friends help us make choices, all right? A lot of times when we're young, we talk with our friends about, you know, people we're falling in love with. We talk with our friends about possible career choices, majors if you're in university, political involvement. And we test that out with our friends. What's ironic, though, is having made a lot of those choices, we might start to grow apart. We might start to become different people. And it's just one of the ironies of young adulthood that these people, the very people that help us make choices to become who we're becoming, after a while, we might be different and not able to live in friendship with them any longer. Go ahead.
No, I thought I was going to take a call here, but please continue.
Help me with the thrust of your question again, John.
Well, you know, how do we come to terms with the fact that people change over time? They aren't the person they were when we were both 5 years old. And in fact, you know, it's silly to assume that you're the person you were when you're 5 years old. We change over time. How do we come to terms with accepting that? You know, those close friendships that we had, well, you know what? We grow up, we change, and we're not the same people. And so we need to maybe move on. How do we, how do we get to the point where we can accept that and actually move on?
That's, you know, you're asking this question it's interesting because to accept the fact that someone has changed, you know, see, here's the thing. Many of us feel that we haven't changed, and in fact we have, and we've changed in important ways. And it may be that the friend has not changed, but we've changed. And sometimes we think that we have changed and we have not changed, okay? So we think that we have grown up and that we've embraced a lot of the responsibilities of what it means to be at a different point in our life, when in fact we haven't changed, and our friend has. And, you know, what's interesting about that is sometimes we need someone outside of the friendship, you know, to comment on the fact that what's going on. They have an ability to see what's going on between us better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's a tough one, John.
I'm trying to,
now you're asking that question. Tell me how you feel you would answer it.
Well, I mean, because I've been in this position, and in my case, it's a little unique. I moved around so much as a child because my dad kept getting different jobs, and we would be someplace for a year, sometimes less, and move on. That, you know, it's hard to make friends when you know you're probably going to be leaving in 6-8 months. And so that affected how, you know, childhood friends, gosh, you know, there were dozens and dozens of them. And most of the friends that I have now, other than one or two, are people that I met much later in life. And so, you know, and in some of those cases, I changed, they changed, and we weren't interested in the same things. And so we don't hang out as much as we did. You know, there's still something there. I could call them and talk or whatever. But, you know, we do change. We grow and other people grow. And sometimes we grow in different directions. And we maybe just need to accept that. I'd like to get a call in here before we get to too much closer to our next news break. Sarah is with us from Zion, Illinois. Sarah, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you so much, John. My comment was exactly what you're talking. Well, my first comment was about how it seems to me that that is the more normal course of things, that people change so much that they can't be close friends with their childhood friends usually. And I mean, and that's certainly been true for me. And I did have this one friend. We were super best friends when we were in middle school, and then we really grew apart. But we reconnected after my sister died about 10 years ago. And we tried to be really good friends, but she talked about herself like all the time, and she just wanted it to be like we were when we were kids. And I tried to connect with her like on our issues of, I tried to make it deeper because we did have some shared like trauma in childhood that we'd never talked about. So I tried to talk about that with her, and she just totally pulled away and rejected me. And then 2 years later, which, like, was incredibly hurtful for me, and then 2 years later, I get these texts from her begging for her to, for us to try to reconnect, and like, she didn't really mean it, and I just texted her back and said, look, I tried. I'm not going to try again with you. It was too hard. So that's my story.
So how did that make you feel, then, when that friendship ended?
When it first ended, actually, because when I decided to, like, try to reach out to her and tell her all this deep stuff, thinking that she would respond, and she didn't, I felt terrible. I felt like she had totally rejected me. But then after a little while, I could see how it was just too much for her. So I didn't really hold it against her, but I couldn't do it again.
But initially, it must have felt a little bit like a betrayal.
It did. It really did, because she had said to me, Sarah, I can, you know, I'll be there for you. You can tell me anything. Let's talk about these things. And then when I did, she couldn't handle it. So, yeah, okay. I did feel really betrayed.
Bill Rollins, this goes back to something that you were talking about earlier. But what I want to do right now, though, is invite other people to join the conversation, because we're just about at news time. But I would really like you to address some of the things that Sarah said when we come back on the other side of the news. We're talking about friendship with Bill Rollins, Stocker Professor of Interpersonal Communication at Ohio University. So tell us your friendship stories. What makes a good friend as far as you're concerned? Maybe you've reconnected with somebody that you lost touch with and you rekindled that friendship. How did that work? Did you ever feel the need to break up with a friend? Did someone become toxic in your life? Or did someone kind of break up with you? What was that like? And what's the key to being a good friend, do you think? 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kerry Kaufman. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kerry Kaufman. Kerry's back on Wednesday. Friendships are an important part of our lives, but they can change over time, and we can lose or gain friendships throughout the course of our lives. We're talking about that this morning on The Morning Show. Bill Rollins is my guest. He's the Stocker Professor of Interpersonal Communication in the School of Communication Studies at Ohio University. We're asking you to share your friendship stories with us this morning, and we have a bunch of callers lined up. There's still space for you at 800-642-1234. Bill, we had a caller, Sarah, before the news, who talked about reconnecting with a childhood friend and trying to share some childhood trauma that they had both experienced, only to find that the other person just didn't want to talk about it, and she felt a real sense of betrayal about that. Earlier, we talked to you. Were talking about a good friend is somebody that we can share anything with. I'd just like you to respond to what Sarah's experience was.
Well, first of all, Sarah, appreciate you, you know, sharing your experience, and I'm happy that you were able to reconnect with your friend. You know, it's not simply a matter of, you know, friends can tell each other anything because, as I mentioned earlier, our friendships are really susceptible to circumstances. And there's almost like an issue of synchronicity. When you reconnected with your friend and you wanted to speak with her, it seems like she wasn't ready. And it was a time when you really needed to, so you felt like maybe she wasn't, you know, able to be friends with you, and was described as feeling betrayed. And then she turns around and tries to reconnect with you. And because you felt this way, you didn't feel like you could do that. And it's kind of ironic, and I respect both of your lived experiences, because there was a time when you reached out for her and she wasn't able to respond. And then she reaches out for you. The thing about friendship is I think if our listeners and the three of us sitting here, Sarah, John, and myself, I think each one of us could say, if we were asked, what are some of the most joyful moments in our life, we would probably mention some times with friends. And if we were asked, what are some of the times when you've been most hurt in your life, we would also mention times with friends. One of the things I've tried to say all along is that friendships involve tensions. They are inherently involve tensions. And the flexibility of friendships is also their vulnerability. And so if people expect too much of friendship, they're going to be disappointed. And I'm not saying any of us has, but I am going to say that they involve a lot of tension. So they bring a lot of joy. They also bring a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that leads into, we had a caller earlier who couldn't stay with us. Jackie was calling in from Eau Claire, but she wanted to know about the impact of unfriending people on social media. Could you perhaps comment a little bit about how social media can affect our friendships? And is it possible to have virtual friends who only exist on social media?
Absolutely. And, you know, I was going to mention unfriending earlier when we were talking about, you know, how do you end friendships? And these days, yeah, I mean, we have social media, which has turned friendship into a verb. And you friend someone, you unfriend someone. I think that there are some upsides, of course, to social media. It allows access to friends that we otherwise wouldn't have. I have friends in Sweden. I have friends in different parts of the world. We would not be able to interact without social media to the extent that we were able to. On the other hand, I think it's had a tremendous watering down of friendship. It's much more superficial, very brief, you know, updates to each other. That's not the same thing as the kind of conversation that sustains and nourishes friendships. And the very idea of unfriending, friending and unfriending, trivializes friendship. It's like a selection. It's like a pull-down menu in which your friends are part of the selections you can make. So mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of upsides, but I think in general it's kind of contributed to a bit of a trivialization of friendship. I really believe that.
Let's take a call next from Dave in Green Bay. Dave, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm really enjoying your discussion here today, and it put me in mind of a situation that happened a couple years ago where through Facebook, I just did a search for the name of an old friend I had in elementary school and high school, and sure enough, he had a Facebook page, and like before, when we were friends as kids, he still liked to fish, and he had posts about that, and so I began occasional posts back and forth with him or messages. And through that, I invited him to come down and go fishing. We live about 7 hours apart. and haven't been in contact since we were kids. And he took me up on it and came down, and what I discovered was that it was almost as though no time had gone by. It was pretty much the same relationship. I think that people tend to have, at least at their core, the same personalities from the time that they're, you know, we know them in elementary school. And so it was just as though no time had gone by, and we were able to just kind of pick right up with the friendship, and the conversation just flowed naturally. We'd be out for hours on the boat, and just never a drop of stitch. It was constant conversation. So just the pleasure of being able to rekindle this. He said, "Do you realize it's been 40 some years since the last time we saw each other?" And I said, "It's just amazing, because it doesn't seem to me, as we talk together, as though all that much has changed."
Dave, thanks for sharing that story with us. Bill Rollins, what do you think of what Dave had to say?
Well, it's a terrific story, and I'm really happy for you. I mean, you know, across adulthood, I would argue there's like three modes of growing apart in friendship. One is, you know, a friendship is over. I mean, it may have been, Dave, that you contacted this old friend, and the person had changed in very significant ways. I respect your opinion that you think there's a core to people. I think people can change for better or worse in important ways. Okay, so guys might have reconnected and realized, wow, no. Okay, the second is dormant. And people talk about this a lot of times to me. They'll say, it feels like they just hung up the phone and they just picked it back up and resumed the conversation, and 20 years have passed, in your case, 40. So the friendship was dormant. Other friendships are sort of like, they're almost like memorials to certain periods in our lives. This was Little League baseball. This was church camp. This was freshman year in college. And when we reconnect with those friends, there's not a lot other than that period. And so they just become kind of memorials to a certain period in our life. However, there's always this possibility that you've presented just a wonderful story about, which is we reconnect with someone from these many years ago, and it's like we had just hung up the phone and picked it back up again. I've had that experience myself, you know, with a friend of mine. We were the battery for a Little League baseball team. I was the catcher. He was the pitcher. And I talked about for years how we hadn't been in contact, and my students would say, "Why don't you contact this guy?" And so I finally did, and it was fantastic. We all these baseball movies we hadn't talked about, we're back, right back. And so, you know, I salute your story. It's a good one.
Dave, thanks so much for sharing that. Let's take a quick call from Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So I've been both the ender and the endee in relationships, but that's not specifically why I called. The way I was raised and what I thought was a good friend is someone who will tell you when you're making a mistake, the same as they will congratulate you on your successes. When you leave a friendship, even if it's headed south and, you know, it's no longer a good relationship, I was taught you don't burn the bridge. Instead, send them off with something more like the Irish blessing, wish them well, you know, may the wind be at their back, the sun on their face, and the rain fall softly on their fields. And with friendships, you know, there's not always perfect reciprocity between being the person who is sharing and being the person who is the listener. And in that case, quite often you get back what you put in.
Marcus, thanks so much for sharing that with us. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. And, looking at the clock, we're almost out of time, so never mind. Forget I mentioned it. We've only got about a minute or two left here, Bill, but what Marcus was saying, don't burn bridges. Even if you're ending a friendship, you know, leave the door open.
He's spoken well. And I guess, again, I would say that friendship is part of the well-lived life. And, you know, if you think friendship always has a moral core to it, close friendship stands for something. So, Marcus, you're emphasizing the fact of, you know, even when a friendship ends, you try to leave some kind of positive, edifying flourish. That would be good. That would be good. I'm not certain that it always happens, especially in the cases of betrayal. And also, I'm not certain that it happens in an explicit way, because friendships drift apart in our culture. People are highly mobile. People are very, very busy, and they drift apart. And maybe we wish we could do that. I'm not sure that we're able to. But I salute the idea. There's an edifying core to friendships, and they're part of the well-lived life.
Well, we are a very mobile society, and we're always maybe making new friends, and then we leave old ones behind, and they do the same to us. As we close, what's been the most surprising thing during your research about how we view friendships?
I guess two things. I mean, one thing is that friendship has a very benign connotation, you know? I mean... Mm-hmm. When you say friend, you think positive, and the only way, the way that we kind of reflect some of the complexity and some of the sad aspects of friendship is to put an adjective on it: Facebook friend, work friend, former friend, fair weather friend. Otherwise, we view friends in a very benign way. The thing that I have found that I think is important to keep in mind is, despite their many virtues, friendships involve tension, and we have to expect to manage some of the cross-cutting demands with our friends.
Right now, we're under the tension of the clock. Bill, thank you so much for spending this hour with us. William Rawlins is the Stonker Professor of Interpersonal Communication in the School of Communication Studies. I'm John Munson, in for Carrie Kaufman. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.